This evening, I thought we could speak on two things. As I mentioned earlier today, I'd like to discuss the contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to the mission, experiencing the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because we visited the home of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the birthplace of Bhaktisiddhanta. Key phrases that should come to the mind when you think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a preacher. One big one is that he was a very far-seeing visionary. In his writings, he envisioned a worldwide organization, a Sangha of Vaishnavas. He passed that on to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who passed it on to Prabhupada, but it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision. And the vision was based upon the simple statement from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that in the town and village, this holy name of the Lord will be heard and chanted. And every town and village, that's pretty significant. That's major. So, he wrote, for example, the day will come to pass when the streets of Mahadweep will be filled with chanters of the Lord's holy name from all the parts of the world. They will come together and chant Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana, when nobody in the world had even heard of Jai Sachinandana. But he saw it. And, of course, as we know, it happened. Through the instruments of the succeeding generation, but it happened. And as it happened, so also in every town and village throughout the world. Every town and village throughout the world. That's a challenge. But one who has faith in such instruction knows it will happen. It's just a question of, using Prabhupada's phrase, time is separating, and it's in between now and the time that's separating is devotional enthusiasm. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur need no limits to devotional enthusiasm. One of the direct contributions that he made was the starting of the Mahatma program in Bengal. He made his headquarters for that Mahatma program the same place that Lord Nityananda made his headquarters for the congregational preaching of the holy name in Godrum Dweep. Svananda Sukhata Punj, his residence in Godrum Dweep, just near Suravi Kunj, where Lord Nityananda resided. So, following Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, he took up that mission and established 500 Mahatma branches. Anybody involved in Bhakti Vriksha preaching? So imagine 500 Mahatma Bhakti Vriksha centers that you personally took responsibility to establish. Just leave all the other services aside, 10 children, high court judge position, writing 100 books, and you just did that one thing out of all the other things. And a whole structure for it, and he created a curriculum for it, and he was dealing with in that case, in many cases, persons that couldn't even read. But they could sing. Bengalis can sing. So he made the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accessible through songs. And then the Bhakti Vriksha coordinator, or the Namahata in charge person, who could read, he then provided a very simple form, question-answer format. Who is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Answer: he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Question: what does that mean? Answer: distinct from the demigods, such as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, he stands alone as the cause of all existence. What's the implication of understanding him to be the cause of all existence? And then, you know, just like paint by numbers. For some that's not an artist, you just, okay, there goes the red, there goes the blue, and oh, you got a picture. It's made it so simple. And then this literature and the songs was made available to the 500 Namahata centers. And made a whole organizational structure. And the theme was everyone has some service. It's just simultaneously simple and brilliant. And then from those little, like, you know, the weekly exercises, he then put them all together into chapters, and the chapters put together became a book. The Enhanas Namahata syllabus. As a visionary, in 1896, he sent the Walk and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to professors in universities around the world. If they wish that at least the educated population should know who is Lord Chaitanya and what are his teachings. That was his wish. He wanted to see Krishna consciousness. Remember, at that time that he was doing these things, right in India itself, Lord Chaitanya and the followers of Lord Chaitanya were in ill repute because of so many apasampradayas that he was fighting against. And his son was fighting against, and they were abundant. But he's thinking the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should go all over the world. A visionary. I remember one morning walk conversation, one morning walk to Prabhupada was in Manipur. And somehow the conversation began, someone asking something, can you tell us something about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? So the conversation began, and at the whole walk, and by the end of the walk, Prabhupada was like radiant, bursting with glee, just describing that whatever Bhaktivinoda Thakur read, he figured out a way to make it happen, and then he made it happen. So, thing after thing after thing, literature and preaching and educators and simple people and breaking the upasampradaya hold over people and bringing good reputation back to Lord Chaitanya, literally by his own example, since he was such a well-known and well-respected individual. The Navadvip Parikrama and establishing Lord Chaitanya's places at pastimes in Navadvip, building the first temple for the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. One devotee asked Prabhupada, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur had such a vision, why did he not personally make it happen? Prabhupada smiled and said, he left something for us to do. And I have similarly left something for you to do. Very merciful. Another, besides visionary, another word is his range was the whole spectrum. He wrote books in Sanskrit, like Tattva Viveka and Anaya Sutras, you know, terse Sanskrit statements, and explained them in Sanskrit for the scholarly group. Then he wrote commentaries on various scriptural writings. Then he wrote poems, he wrote essays, he wrote on topics, he wrote summary studies of things, he wrote novels. One book, Jivadharma, a very comprehensive book. Jivadharma is a novel, but in the novel, it's explaining teachings of Lord Chaitanya, teachings of Rupa Goswami. This is a question-answer method within the context of the book. In his, I was mentioning earlier today, the Bhagavad, its philosophy, ethics, and theology. In that book, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, classic literature, he gave the example of Milton's Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained, because his audience was more familiar with European literature than their own. So he was explaining that that was nothing other than taking the message of the Bible and extrapolating from the Bible in contemporary language. And the Iliad and the Odyssey, and he was going probing the territory that intellectuals of his time were very familiar with and bring back to. It's all founded on scriptural teaching. So what's really important is scriptural teaching. But at the same time, he used the same method. The storyline of Jivadharma is around the same time as Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived, several and many generations after Chaitanya lived. There were two contemporary personalities, two young men living in Calcutta. And they went on a vacation. And they went on a vacation to Navadvip because they heard, you know, there's something happening in Navadvip, so they went there. And when they went there, off in the distance, they saw the Mahasayas and their kirtan, and they went, whoa, what's this? And they went, and they experienced what it was, and they came back, oh, I don't know if we're interested in that, that's too, you know, we're modern. But they went, so he takes the reader through the discussions of the internalized thought process of someone of his time. Let's go and find him. So they went again, and then he started asking questions, and he just takes you through Dasamula Tattva, Bhaktirasami to Sindhu, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami, to Rupa Goswami, and to Ramananda Roy. I mean, anyone who's familiar with these texts, you just go and chapter by chapter. That's what it is. And then the boys become really attracted, and then the parents start getting really concerned, they're getting too attracted. And then one of the two boys is going through this intern dilemma, should I get married or should I just live in the ashram? And he gives this argument and he gives that argument, and his friend advises him this way, and then they finally decide, let's go ask the Mahasaya what he says, and he gives his answer. Invites studying your character, you should get married, and how the Yukta Vairagya principle is, and it's just the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in a modern novel format. Now people are intrigued. Yeah, Calcutta, Bengali, I heard about Navadvip, what goes on in Navadvip. It's got a bad reputation, but no, it's the beauty, the genuine thing. Kamal Krishnamurti did the same with his, I forget what the title of the book is, but the Chinese. No. Yoga for the Moon and Age. Some young person from China gets his visa to come to the world of milk and honey in New York City. and he lives on Canal Street, and he undergoes, hey, what's all this materialism and some ideas of God, and how do I sort it? You know, the same thing that a Chinese person might go through. And then he meets a devotee on the street, and he meets this, and I heard about Christianity, but I never heard about that one. And as with Kamal Krishnamurti, when he was writing a book, he'd go for a walk every day on Canal Street, and he'd just get in the mood and go and sit and write. It was, he was writing for the people in China, so they would get an understanding of, you have this desire to go to America, so here's what you might follow. You go to America, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, to find the Krishna consciousness. From the perspective of a Chinese immigrant to America. Very clever. And very effective. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakura wrote some of such literature. But it wasn't just fiction. It was Krishna consciousness. But packaged for the palate of his audience. And then very simple little pamphlets and songs explaining the whole of the process of surrender through Sharanagati poems and brilliant. And his range was the whole thing. Everybody. Everybody. And very effective. And we already discussed fearless. And dynamic in his energetic output. As one man, he did what, just like his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, what it would take a team of 15 to 20 men to do. A lifetime. He would do it in short time. A great emphasis when you think of Bhaktivinoda Thakura, you should think of printing, publishing. Not only he is a literary person himself, but he printed the writings of previous acharyas, even in other sampradayas, and just, you know, made voluminous material available to people. That, you know, the medium of the printing press to using the Yukta Vairagya principle, to utilize that particular field of technology, printing and publishing, as a medium of spreading very broadly Krishna consciousness. And used it very, very effectively and very liberally, not just this version. He's very broad. And therefore he could carry with him many people. And that's one of the ways that he will be able to overcome the wave of opposition that one can expect from a very strong and powerful person. Because he's very broad-minded in his approach. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had almost a diametrically opposite approach. There's places, references, where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would have a transcendental dispute with his father about style. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's style was humble persuasion. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's style was just putting it right on the table. Strong. Straightforward. The Singha Guru of Bhaktisiddhanta, there's one place where it describes that he was in another group, and there was a particular Nagarjuna that was very popular and very active. So he saw Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati coming, he walked to the other side of the street. Bhaktisiddhanta walked to the same side of the street and stood right in front of him. And trembling, said, "Why are you cheating people? Why are you depriving them of the relationship with Krishna? This is cheating. Why are you cheating people?" The man was speechless. He said nothing and just continued walking. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's approach. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's approach, as grihastha, he would invite people to his home. And, you know, a brilliant literary person with so many books that he's written and so many people appreciating him, and he would entertain them and by humble persuasion bring them to consider another point of view, in their point of view. And Bhaktisiddhanta would sometimes say, "Why do you bring these rascals into your home? Simply cheaters. They're misleading the public. Their life is dedicated to doing simply that. Why do you bring them here?" The Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a different style, different approach. And of course, both are empowered acharyas. And our Krishna consciousness allows for variety of styles, varieties of approaches, that Krishna can empower and make one or another very effective. So we should consider like that when we see different personalities having different styles. It's perfectly okay. As long as they're faithful to the teachings, and then the practical result comes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur delivered the practical result. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as a preacher, he was a great reformer. Like in Jagannath Puri, the decrease of the standard of the worship of Jagannath went right back to the proper standard. When there were deviations in Sampradaya teachings, very strongly he established the proper teachings. By method of humble persuasion, he established the proper teachings. He was a reformer. He had a great taste for the chanting of the holy name. He didn't just preach about it, he personally tasted it with much relish, the chanting of the holy name. He very eagerly sought out association of whatever saintly persons he could find. There's one description while he was here in Puri, very near the Tota Gopinath temple, I can't recall the name, there was one Babaji who was blind. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur very much appreciated his qualities. So he would go and spend time just discussing Krishna Katha with him. And one of the most amazing things was, because of his humility, so just, we're going to be visiting Tota Gopinath, so I had to put this picture in your mind. Picture in your mind when we went to the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur, and you go up the street and down the, down a few blocks. So it's like not right at the ocean. So this movie's practice was every night, in the middle of night, plus he's blind anyways, he would go take his bath in the ocean at midnight, late, like pitch black, and then come back. Now the question Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked him is, how do you find the ocean when you're blind in the middle of the night? Guranga Mahaprabhu helps me, was the answer. And he would, after taking his bath, and then just continue chanting. It was a question when the man even slept. but he was experiencing such happiness from his chanting and discussing Krishna Katha. Another was only mentioned, but part of preaching is training devotees. So Bhakti Vinod trained persons by his achar and by his prachar. And although Grihastha mentioned this, but Babaji's and, you know, persons ashram wise beyond his superior position, they would come and hear from Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And by hearing from Bhakti Vinod Thakur, take deep inspiration in their own spiritual life. This is also preaching Krishna consciousness. Inspiring others by a deep rendering of the teachings of pure devotional service. And it's this, the list can go on, but this wish to see very strong conviction that the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be heard all over the world. That was very strongly felt by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and was the cause of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur making such efforts. So basically, we go ahead and see the Prabhupada's coming to the West, and here we are. From the West, the persons from the West coming back to India, because even when Prabhupada tried preaching in India, nothing. Just wasn't Krishna's plan. There wasn't the right time, the right circumstance. Wasn't Krishna's plan. He wanted to go to the West, and when the Western devotees came back, many, many people in India that would not take up Krishna consciousness seriously began taking up Krishna consciousness seriously. So this chronology of the pure teaching and practice were in isolated places, but largely the pure teachings and the practice of Mahaprabhu gone and he appeared prominent. And that's the field of Bhakti Vinod Thakur is to turn that around, bring respect, and bring a manifest presence of pure devotion, and provide the library, the literature, the teachings widely available. Bhakti said, Sati Thakur, then in turn taking that same mood and carrying it further with printing, publishing, distributing, opening temples, training devotees. Forget the number of disciples Bhaktisiddhanta initiated, 10,000 or some vast number, maybe much more than that. I can't. 40,000. 40,000. 40,000. Yeah, I recall that figure. But primarily in India, although he wanted very much this strong temples in India to make contributions so they could send two leading sannyasis to go. Big fanfare, the pictures of big ceremonies launching this mission to send the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to England. And instructing not just those persons and not just Prabhupada, but many persons expressing this as a strong desire. And it took Prabhupada's taking it very seriously upon his head and carrying that instruction. And then the international Sangha of Vaishnavas. What a great resource that is. Especially in our modern times. Those of you that have jams that are sometimes in this place and sometimes in that place and sometimes in that place, the next thing you'd be like a ping pong ball. Bouncing around her billiard ball, just poof, 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 poof. Wherever you go, always, but there's some association if you avail yourself to it. But similar practice, similar teachings, where has that existed in the world? doesn't exist in the world. You just go down the block and there's like five different varieties of something else. What a fortune you have. And my statement this evening is, this comes from the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He saw it. He blessed that it would happen. And he gave the impetus and the means and the vision for it to happen. And surrendered his soul to make it happen. We're the fortunate recipients of that, the fruit of that vision. Very, very, very much indebted to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's wonderful to think of such a great soul. And then let us try to serve and assist in our whatever little way we can. Best, whatever little way we can, we do it collectively in nice cooperation with others. But continue to stay inspired in that humble mood of service, serving the great, great souls. Get their mercy. I'd also like to spend some time continuing with Jagatan and Pandit. I remember the word that he used to describe himself. Of course, I don't know what the Bengali word was, but he used the word eccentric. Supramadaran was an eccentric. And I'm going to read some of his excerpts from Prema Vivarta, a book that he wrote, inspired to write it by Bhakti Surab Damodar, or Surab Damodar, excuse me. And you can, well, there'll be lots of laughter because it's, he's eccentric. But stronger, far stronger than the eccentricities, is his the strength of his love. It's so charming and so strong that you can't help but feel attracted to Jagatan and the Pandit. And his, at least from the biography, the three or four closest persons to him, besides Lord Chaitanya, were Gadadhar Pandit, Surup Damodar, Sanatan Goswami, and Kavi Karnapur. Those were his buddies, his closest friends, those that understood his heart. And although all of them are extremely scholarly, extremely topmost scholarly, vastly learned and great orators, they had to encourage Jagatan to write. And what he wrote was just, I'm going to write whatever I feel like. That's just me. So here's what he felt like. One day, this is in Navadvip, I was totally absorbed in praying, and my Lord entered the deep forest on the bank of the river Alakananda, Ganga. Gadadhar Pandit and I quickly got up and followed behind him. A splendid parrot, perched in a fragrant bukal tree, observed our movements. So there's these three moving about in the forest of Alakananda River. The Lord saw a parrot, and catching hold of him, he said, "You are the son, so you should sing the glories of Sri Radhan Krishna and increase our bliss." The parrot, ignoring the Lord's words, began to sing, "Oh, hurry!" the Lord feigned anger and hurled the parrot away. The parrot continued to sing, "Bora, Bora," and began to dance. We immediately felt the stirrings of ecstatic emotions, hearing the parrot's wonderful song. The Lord again said, "Oh, parrot, this is Vrindavan. Sing loudly the divine names of Radha and Krishna, so that everyone can hear." The parrot responded, "Vrindavan is now transformed into another group, and I see Radha and Krishna in the form of Gaur Hari. I'm a parrot living in the forest, simply surviving on the chanting of the holy name of Gaur. You are my Krishna, and Gadadhar here is my Radharani. I offer my prostrated obeisances at the feet of anyone who remembers the ambrosial pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." Then he gives sobering instructions. "Do not indulge in useless criticism and finding faults in others. Deep within your heart, simply worship the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with unflinching devotion. Chant Lord Gauranga's holy name, because his name is omnipotent. All other names of the demigods, goddesses, and Vishnu tattvas are perfectly harmonized and contained in his name." Prior to Lord Chaitanya's appearance, demigod worship was very prominent in Navadvip. Now, with this, Gaur Hari's name. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the original spiritual master in this cosmic creation, so teach everyone the process of simple, unalloyed love for Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Give up deceit and hypocrisy and purify your mind. Either sincerely worship Gauranga or maintain society, family, and friendship. It is impossible to do both. Listen. Choose between engaging yourself in transcendental emotional service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or taking shelter of mundane activities. Serving family, friends, and society, it is impossible to maintain both these activities simultaneously. Now this next phrase I have put on my wall and my bulletin board right in front of my desk. We caution that if we do not develop single-mindedness in executing devotional service, then we place ourselves in the impossible task of trying to cross a river with two boats with 1 foot in each. What happens? You fall in the water. Cross the ocean with one, or a river with 1 foot in each and two boats. It's a very foolish proposal. And Jagatananda is saying, full commitment to devotional service. Single-mindedness in the execution of devotional service. Then, it is good that my wounds give me horrible pleasure. Suffer eternal tribulations because his happiness brings me great joy. I weep day and night, fearing pangs of separation from the Lord, and my Lord Gaur simply smiles, looking at my tear-streaked face. That sannyasi Gaurachandra is actually a cheater. And I love his wonderful pastimes and his nectarian words. My Lord is now manifesting that same mood he previously manifested in Braja Vrindavan. Yet understanding all this, I cannot fully enter into that mood. Now here's Jagatananda's version of the breaking of the oil pot. Once, I had a pot of pure sandalwood oil, but in return he simply gave me cutting words. So out of insolence and frustration, broken at heart in front of him, angry, and in a sulking mood, I remain fasting. But my wonderful mood, using devious means, dissolved my ire. He made me cook wild green varieties of spinach for our meal, saying, "Food prepared by an angry cook enhances the taste." This statement incensed me further, and he seemed more pleased by this. His joys are my only precious concern. When Sanatana inquired me about what he should do, I advised him to go to Vrindavan. The Lord thought it was foolish of me to try and advise Sanatana Goswami. I am always amazed to see how childlike the Lord is. I fervently hold on to his lotus feet for shelter. Then when I desired to go to Vrindavan, he refused my permission, giving me various excuses, trying to deceive me. And when I resisted his order, he asked me to go to another group. Of course, I consider all this his causeless mercy on me. Just appreciate the nature of this loving relationship. Simply telling the world, "I am Lord Chaitanya's servant," will not suffice. Real success in devotional life comes when one takes to heart the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Making an external show of worshipping Lord Chaitanya, keeping the appearance of a devotee wearing tila, tasi mala, etc., but secretly committing sins, then Lord Gauranga will certainly discover such a cheater and deceiver. You will become very degraded and despised by everyone if you try to act in this way. All of which devotional practices will be ruined by committing offenses against the holy name. Such a capricious mentality will hurl you to the depths of depravity, and you'll be shunned by all. You'll be forced to commit sinful offenses against the holy name, which will gradually destroy the paper of devotion. What is more crippling to devotional service than committing sins while chanting the holy name? No hardship is involved in chanting the holy name. It is an easily attainable, priceless, spiritual gem. Simply by moving the lips and tongue and loudly pronouncing the Lord's name, one can chant the holy name. And if that involves too much physical effort, then certainly it's easy to remember the holy name. And if a person is dumb or suffering from mental aberrations, he can at least hear the holy name of the Lord, and that hearing will destroy all sinful reactions within his heart and give him the highest in spiritual life. As a result of worshipping the temple deity with proper devotion for many, many births, the holy name of Krishna appears and dances constantly on one's tongue. The paths of fruitive activity, speculative knowledge, and mystic yoga are incapable of offering the same spiritual success because, according to the scriptures, a little fault in the execution of these processes will render everything null and void. So, give up endeavoring in these other processes. Take complete shelter in the holy name. For it is by essence, or it is the essence of all religious practices. And very soon you can easily cross over the ocean of birth and death. Now another section glorifies Kavi Karnapur. Kavi Karnapur is the author of Gaura Bhagavadesh Deepika, which says, in Gaura Leela, who is who of Krishna's Leela? He is the son of Shivananda Sain. So he writes, "All glories to Kavi Karnapur. He is a greatly blissful soul. Both of us hail from the same village just before coming here. We were visiting Kumarahatta, right near the home of Shivananda Singh, which is where Kavi Karnapur came from. Kavi Karnapur has revealed in his writing some of the marvelous qualities of the holy name. One who is the recipient of Lord Gauranga's mercy is certainly the most fortunate soul in the entire universe. Kavi Karnapur, having received the Lord's mercy at the tender age of 7, became respected by all as a great poet. All glory to Sri Sivananda Sain, the father of Sri Kavi Karnapur. In my early years, he taught me Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. He took me to Nubia and placed me at the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga. Sivananda Sain has always been my savior and mentor in times of happiness and distress. In his house, he taught me cooking, allowing me to prepare the deity's offering, and because he taught me well, I could cook for my Lord Sri Gauranga and satisfy him with my service. My humble submission to all is that he who stays in the company of saintly Vaishnavas can constantly chant the holy name of the Lord. Then he speaks about, if he was a sannyasi, he speaks about dry renunciation and yukta vairagya. Remain in your house and chant the name of Lord Krishna constantly. Utilize different material objects properly, but without any attachment for them. Realize the true purport of the word yata yogya. Real or appropriate. Do not misconstrue its meaning and then lead a life of debauchery. Accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable for the execution of pure devotional service. Tell me, where can you live in this world without material contact? If you escape to the forest, you will find material entanglement, material love, and so on, all around you. The stomach will accompany you to the forest to maintain your body. Just try and imagine the dilemma you have to face. One rejects the true meaning of the instruction, yukta vairagya, and follows the misconstrued meaning, becomes attracted to sense gratification, is forced to remain in a crooked path of self-deceit. Amassing immense wealth, he pampers his palate with good food, wears fine clothes, spends days and nights in carnal pursuits in the company of ladies, and at other times the fool hunts for comfortable beds and lavish houses. It is essential to maintain the body and soul, so strive to keep this body fit. Anyway, for these practical instructions, while he has this eccentric side, he's fixed in his practices. Be always affectionate and respectful to the Vaishnavas, taking care to serve them with offering prasad and other personal services. Again, in case you are without any means, then satisfy them with your kindness and sweet words. Endear yourself to Lord Krishna's eternal associates, servitors, gopi damsels that serve the Lord so well. Embrace them within your heart with deep love. A real renunciant practices constant devotional service. In chanting the Lord's names and pastimes, he will show compassion to all living beings. The last paragraph I'm going to read. Lord Krishna may provide us with the association of his eternal servitors, or he may confiscate everything we possess, which he himself has kindly given. Yet to us he will always remain the source of divine unlimited bliss. In this way, Lord Gauranga, this is the way of Lord Gauranga. But I will never leave him. Therefore, discard your lamentation and illusion and chant the holy names of Krishna incessantly. Jagatananda humbly declares that he prefers this transcendental mode of always fighting with Lord Gauranga more than anything else. So I don't know how you're going to do this with translation into Hindi, but... one of the statements that come direct from Prem Vivaka that Prabhupada quoted often, Krishna Mukha Hana Boga Vancha Kali Nikatasta Niyatani Vipati Yatani. This doesn't have the exact translation, but as soon as a living entity forgets his constitutional position and endeavors to become one with the Supreme, his conditioned life begins and he becomes Japati Adari, slipped down by the material energy. Bahi Mukha Jeev, Bhoga Vancha Kali. This very phrase is a phrase that Jiva Goswami uses in Bhakti Sandarbha when he philosophically, he's raising the question, how does a living entity become entangled in illusion to begin with? Because if you understand the answer to that question, you can understand how to get out of illusion. Just like if we understand where the door is that we came through to get into this room, you can understand the path to get out of the room. There may be other paths, but with very simple logic. And then he considers maybe this, maybe that, maybe this, and then refutes this, that, that, this, and that, and concludes this one. Well, just as Jagadananda is saying, this is like essential teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, turning Bahir Krishna Bahir Mukha. When we turn our face, turn our attention away from Krishna, look for happiness apart from Krishna, we can get slapped in the material energy. Hoping for happiness, simply getting distress. And that's, of course, Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita also. The living entity becomes caught in this network of suffering, springing out of the desire to be an enjoyer, which is like the opposite of what you want. You want enjoyment, you get suffering. And it's Maya. What looks like happiness is suffering. And to the materialist, what looks like suffering, the life that the devotee lives, is real happiness. What's night for the conditioned soul is daytime for the introspective sage, and vice versa. One man's food is another man's poison. So the mode of goodness, happiness, is also binding. And the transcendental position is give our full attention once again to Krishna. And we do that in practical way through the medium of service. Service is the medium, and attention to Krishna is the spirit, the mood, loving service. Then another that comes in Rupa Goswami's teachings, there's this interesting little chapter from Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami's, because Jiva Goswami was under the training of Rupa Goswami. Although Jiva Goswami was brilliant, he was under the training of Rupa Goswami. So once one scholar came to Vrindavan, and Rupa Goswami appreciated his scholarship and devotion, and he asked him, could you assist me in writing Bhakti Nisamrita Sindhu? Can you go through and see if you find something that you feel, you know, like doing a job and see what you can come up with, or something that some way it can be improved. And there was one verse that he drew his attention, and he pointed it out to Rupa Goswami. I think it's a little extreme when you say that one who becomes involved in material life becomes haunted by a witch. Like that's, you know, it's a little, tone it down a little bit. Just, you know, editing recommendation, it's a little extreme. And when Jiva Goswami heard this comment, he took exception. How can you, this is Rupa Goswami. His teachings are perfect. And he strongly preached to the man and convinced him, yes, that's right. There's scriptural references to this and it's appropriate. And Rupa Goswami was not so happy. He said, why are you dealing with him this way? I asked him to help. He's just speaking out of help. He's not criticizing, not fault-finding. He's just doing his service. So, Pishachi Pavayena Muti Chanahai Ma Grasta Jivarahai Se Bha Udai. According to the statement from Prema Vivarta, when a living entity is conditioned by material nature, he acts exactly like he's haunted by a ghost. Haunted by a ghost, but not in devotional service. Like ruled by some other force, it's called the mind, and receiving dictates from senses, saying, I want happiness means go over there and do this. And just being controlled by like a ghost. And devotional service means to be freed from that ghostly haunted condition, like controlled by man, like being controlled by a ghost. Last quote for the evening. Ek Krishna Nampapira Yata Papa Kshaya. You generally say Papi Karite Naraya. This means that once chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can be free from the reactions of more sins than he can even imagine performing. The holy name is so spiritually potent that simply by chanting the holy name, one can be free from the reactions to all sinful activities. What to speak of one who worships the deity and chants the holy name and strives to purify himself. So, we may be struggling. I know a few devotees that are struggling and trying to make nice advancement in Krishna consciousness. But the message, Jagatananda's message to us, and the message of our disciplic line, is that we should have great faith in that chanting process. And with great faith, it can take us beyond the position of struggle. The position of struggle is felt more acutely when one doesn't feel the spiritual strength of Krishna. But when one feels the spiritual strength of Krishna, that they can very easily carry on beyond the struggle. Isn't that Krishna's teaching also? Devi Yeshu Gunani, Lalamara, Duratyaya, Duratyaya. Duratyaya, very difficult struggle. Just using material energy. But by depending upon Krishna, Mam Eva Ye Prapadyante, Mayamitam Tarantite. And this process of chanting with single mindedness of purpose can carry us beyond the whole ocean of grief and material suffering. And struggle for happiness. Happiness is in that shelter of the personality guided, and this is very strongly the teaching we find in Prema Vibharta, and he also appreciates Kavi Karnapur's strong teachings and faith in the chanting of the holy name. And how do they get their spiritual position by that strong faith in the Holy Name and constant chanting and associating with elevated Vaishnavas. What's our schedule? I'm tempted to take some questions. We haven't had time for any questions. Because it's like one thing after the next thing. Should we do that, or? Yeah? After so many hours and hours and hours, and no opportunity for questions, maybe you might shut off or something. Yes. 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 Mm. On the spiritual platform is the qualifier. Humility is on the spiritual platform. So then thinking on the spiritual platform of my position in relation to Krishna. Very tiny. And Krishna is very great. And therein you find Venus. Because the relationship between yourself and Krishna, the tiny in relation to the great, is service. And that's that in the spiritual conception. In the material conception, it's envy. But the spiritual conception is service. So one becomes eager for that spiritual position of service enhances the aptitude for eagerness. It works otherwise, it works in an opposite way in material conceptions. If I'm going to be eager, I've got to pump myself up. Yeah, you can do it. And so on. And our friends tell us, yeah, you can do it. You're great. You're my friend. It won't flatter or is one's enemy. Bhakti Siddhanta would say. The one who can remind one of the greatness of Krishna, the really wonderful qualities of Krishna, the feature of the relationship with Krishna, that's one's best friend. But what is my qualification before Krishna? And very insignificant, but there is an eternal spiritual relationship. So let me abandon this duality and delusion and striving for fruitive stuff and just become situated in that relationship. That I can be very enthusiastic for. Very, very eager. That's reality. Something else? Yeah. And you only have one child.
Yeah.
possible, he is empowered. And how did that empowerment come? Great eagerness. And a very open heart to receive empowerment. And a pure heart. Didn't have other motivations or agendas or purposes. Other agendas and purposes drain our energy. They sap our energy. And give us something else to do, some other engagement. In the back, you have a question? How do you know, Stankwar? Did he find another place to live? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, the same Ganges.
Oh, yeah. Same Ganges. Another cave. He has spiritual benefit better than me residing on the bank of the Ganges by serving Kalidas Thakur. Far greater than where you keep, what cave you live in. I think you just said it. You don't pretend to be on the spiritual platform that you're not. If one understands, I don't have the qualifications, but I aspire for those qualifications, that's your position. But that's a very elevated position. It's a very rarely achieved position in this world. It's a very fortunate and rare position. So that's relative to the rest of the world. Now you go just to the small slice of the world of devotion. I'm just a little pipsqueak without qualification. So that's fine. Don't think of yourself greater than that. And from that position, that's the humble position. And the spiritual conception, because it's just, we're just beginners. You know, we hear about these activities of these elevated Vaishnavas, and we're definitely beginners. That's okay. So then just be honest with oneself. I'm just a beginner, but I'm following those that are, or I'm striving to follow those that are far more than beginners. They're more than intermediates. They're, and those very elevated souls, they're very compassionate. And so there's hope. But I shouldn't pretend to be something I'm not. That's all. That's the stage of sadhana that we're cultivating, practicing. That's all. Yes. I'm able to understand your question. There's a room that they're serving in here, and there's another room that they're simultaneously serving in. Simultaneously, they're serving in both realms. And if we cannot understand that other realm that they're serving in, that's quite okay. This is the self-honesty. I don't understand it. I don't deny it, or I don't doubt it. I just don't understand it. But that's another way of saying the same thing that Sri Radhika said. The honest statement is, I'm not so spiritually advanced. And therefore my estimation is less than what I know it should be. That's an honest statement. Now what to do? Go on hearing. Go on serving and stay in that honest, humble mood of service. In the process of hearing, will act most effectively. One of the classes that I spoke while here, I'll emphasize the same point again. As like a theme, we are dependent upon mercy. It was spoken at Gambira. These things are so high. How can we? It's not by anything that we do in our side that qualifies us. We must perform sadhana bhakti in a very careful manner. It's not that sadhana bhakti creates the qualification. It's descending mercy that creates the qualification. So it's not that we trash our efforts in our sadhana bhakti. We shouldn't have a misconception that it's my, that's foolish conception. It's my effort that's generating my qualification. And that I can understand. Like the ascending process, like the whole academic process that everybody learns since they're kids. It's another process, a whole other paradigm. The endeavor. And in our hearts, the crying out for a drop of mercy. This is a theme in Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings. Praying to great Vaishnavas for their mercy. Not in words, from the heart, praying to the Vaishnavas for their mercy. We're going to these places, and it would have been nice, in one sense, to speak about Jagat Anandapada before going to his place, but we did it because of schedule, we did it that way. But when you think of the deities, not just the enthusiastic pujari that wanted to tell us everything about Jagat Anandapada, the deities and the mood of Jagat Ananda's worship. We can, tonight when we go to our rooms, we can think of Jagat, what love Jagat Anandapada had for about your time. It was even astounding to Sanatana Goswami, the intensity of his love. Jagat Anandapada, one drop of your mercy. So he's giving his drops of mercy in the form of his instructions. We take those instructions to our heart. And then we're using his mercy, and that way we can make some advances. It is not just the instruction, it's the relationship. It's the mercy of Lord Chaitanya coming through that relationship of establishing a relationship with Nityananda Pandit or Bhakti Vinod Thakur or Bhakti Siddhanta and these great souls. And that's how it goes from here to there. It's not us, it's this mercy. We cannot advance, we cannot understand. We'll just stay, spinning our wheels in the mud. Stuck. Without so that the Rupa Goswami metaphor of the Chakora bird just flown to the air waiting for some drops of water to fall. And otherwise we'll die of thirst. Although there's apparently water everywhere. It's that's the water we want. This descending mercy. And these great souls, with many hands they want to give. So, that's how one can go, one step at a time, closer to deepening the understanding. Coming to a holy place like this, and hearing, and praying, and intensifying that eagerness for mercy, for their kindness, for their spiritual gift. As to another degree, that a little bit awakens in our heart. That's the path of making progress. And it feels altogether different, and feels right. It brings a joy that's not like anything else. That's spiritual, that's Krishna consciousness, that's the gift. That's why I come here. These souls. It's described that when great personalities perform their activities, they need their spiritual emotion in that place. Like I commented, this devotee that had not been to Puri for 20 years, and vivid in his mind was visiting Siddha Bukul. Not just the physical surroundings, but the feeling of this spiritual vibration of the place. 20 years later, it's still with him. So, that's how to go incrementally from what you just described to a deepening of appreciation, descending mercy. So it's a gradual process because our hearts are hard. And our conditioning is in reverse, very ego-centered rather than Krishna-centered. Very much of the methodology of ascending rather than descending process. So it takes a while. Did you hear the question? Prabhupada's example is that when resistance is low, one contracts a disease. When Krishna consciousness becomes weak, Maya comes. So there was a period of time when the teachings of pure devotion were weakened, so the other came in. And what should we do depends upon our particular qualification. But one thing is we don't mix with those people, and another is we don't disrespect them. We just don't mix with them. And so I've been very careful just to give a little, like, antidote, little medicine, little pill, so one doesn't become charmed by that. And let's see what happens over a period of time. And so much depends upon whether Krishna consciousness becomes very strong. Just like, you know, receiving the Bhakti Kuti right next to, you know, going to Tidas has a very important service in Jagannath Puri. Making Krishna consciousness in a good way, appreciated in a strong, positive way. Let's see what else, if that were to happen, let's see what else may come. Just like in Mayapur, at the Jagannath Temple, at one point almost the Harihara Temple. And so, in time, just continue our efforts of making Krishna consciousness strong and pure. Yeah. Elements of faith and chanting. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, written by Sanatana Goswami, he gives certain of them. One of them that comes to mind immediately is that there are 6 points that he says can enhance the effectiveness of one's chanting, and one of them is the appreciating the meaning of the mantra. Now, the meaning of the mantra in the case of a Gayatri mantra may mean the meaning of the syllables that we're chanting. In the case of Mahamantra, the indication is that the Lord and His name are none different. I mean, immediately that's totally transcendental, and it's very sobering. If you are in the presence of the Supreme Lord, are you going to be inattentive? So conversely, if you're not in that consciousness, it's easy to be inattentive. Watch it every morning. There's lots of inattentive. Lots. So, that's a starter. The Lord and His holy name are none different. And I would say, this can be a long list, but one other thing is just on the strength of the instruction itself. The meter perfected soul is telling us to put it in a silver platter with velvet cushion, saying, this is it, take it. So just this, having proper regard and respect for the position, here it is. It's the real thing. And there isn't anything that equals or can match it. Our full attention should go there. So it's the gratitude of receiving the most valuable gift. What do you do when you receive the most valuable gift? Besides say thank you. You bring that gift into your heart and you utilize it in its fullness. That's the purpose of the gift giver. That's what the gift giver wants to see. Not just that you say thank you, but you utilize it fully. Isn't it when you give a gift to someone, you're happy when you see that they use it? We should use it. Make these great Vaishnavas that want to give us that gift very happy. We'll get their full mercy. And be in our relationship with them as a result. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki.